You're listening to Digital Pioneers Dialogue, a podcast bringing you unfiltered, exclusive insights from some of the world's top minds on all things artificial intelligence. From specific policy recommendations to broader discussions about the implications of AI for society, technology, and more, Digital Pioneers Dialogue is here to equip you with the premier AI podcasting experience. My name is Angelica Sorotin, executive producer and co-host of the podcast. I am an up-and-coming venture entrepreneur and founder, as well as Gen Z digitalization expert, pulling in the younger generation into the AI conversation. My co-host is Mark Manevich, also known around the world as AI Mark, and he is a leading AI and digital cognitive strategist to enterprises and governments. On today's dialogue, we are joined by Dov Moran, managing partner of Grow Ventures, one of Israel's top investors, entrepreneurs, world-renowned high-tech leaders, and inventor of the USB memory stick, as well as Or Kremer, co-founder and CMO of Beyond Minds, a portfolio company of Grow Ventures. On today's dialogue, we are joined by Dov Moran, managing partner of Grow Ventures, one of Israel's top investors, entrepreneurs, world-renowned high-tech leaders, and inventor of the USB memory stick, as well as Or Kremer, who is the co-founder and CMO of Beyond Minds, which is a portfolio company of Grow Ventures. Or and Dov, thank you so much for being on the show with us today.
Pleasure being here.
Thank you, Angelica.
Absolutely. So our objective today is to get into, obviously, the world of venture capital and digital technologies, explore it both on a high level and in depth, and highlight some of significant trends that are appearing both in Israel and globally, why Israel has succeeded as the premier startup nation of the world, and the implications of the direction that VC is taking for enterprises, governments, and society at large. Now, I also want to emphasize to the younger audience that is listening that one of the most pressing issues of the modern day is how this fast-paced roadmap towards digitalization is really going to transform our lives as we know it. And transformation doesn't only mean positive benefits, it also means things like job automation and challenges. It means adapting to the new economic circumstances in order to survive. But with all of that being said, it also means leveraging these new technologies and this new environment and landscape so that we can thrive like no other previous generation could of youth. And as we are the younger generation, we must play an active role in carrying out this digital transformation, which means not only amending our skill sets, but really taking needed risks and becoming real digital pioneers like our guest today on the show with us. And with that introduction, I pass the microphone over to Mark for his focus today.
Thank you very much, Angelica. It's a privilege and honor for us to have such a major personality and a leader in high tech and the investment community, Dov Moran, who led the life on creating breakthrough disruptive technologies, and his colleague, as Angelica mentioned, Or Kremer, focusing on artificial intelligence. Today, we'll focus on innovation. Innovation in the heart of innovation, startup nation, and discover what does it mean to create disruptive innovation? Where does it come from? What concepts are the most interesting? How does all of that scale? How do you build up momentum to create significant value and return on investment in the area of artificial intelligence, IoT, and other very hardcore disruptive technologies? We know that there is a whole view now in Silicon Valley that Silicon Valley for years has been focusing on unicorns and technologies which are very successful with big names. But today, the situation has drastically changed with this COVID-19 virus, Angelica, as you know. And we are, as MIT mentioned, focusing on social innovation that is focused on improving our infrastructure, improving our telecommunications, improving our healthcare, which requires really very difficult, challenging hardware, software solutions, and not just dealing with communities and not just dealing with innovation to optimize and create efficiencies, but dealing with issues that are going to solve some massive social problems. In fact, in Japan, Dov, you will probably know that they call it Society 5.0 because they're saying that AI and IoT and all of those technologies are going to enhance the life and create different human-centric society. So we'll touch upon all of this. But before we do this, I would like for the audience audience to understand, Dov Morin is one of the Israelis' best-known breakthrough entrepreneurs, most prominent high-tech leader and investor. He is also known, as Angelica mentioned, as a pioneer of flash memory technologies, most notably an inventor of the USB flash drive. Under Dov's leadership, M Systems grew to $1 billion revenue. It was acquired by SemDisk Corporation, a Nasdaq-based company, for $1.6 billion, still ranks as one of the single biggest acquisitions in Israel. After the sale of the M Systems, Dov founded Modu, an innovative company which revolutionized modular phone concepts, and assets were acquired by Google in 2011, the basis of the Google's modular phone project. After that, Dov has invested in many successful startups in the digital health, media, IoT sectors, and others. He serves on the boards of the companies, some of the companies that they invested, Rapid API, Tri AI, Villard, Spry Health, Kirillis, and was also the chairman of the Tower Semiconductors in Israel and other countries. Dov is one of the most famous and highly appreciated high-tech leaders in the world, has received many prestigious awards, such as IEEE Reynolds B. Johnson Information Storage Systems Award and Edward Ryan Award, the Nobel Prize for Technology, and has been inventor for over 40 patents. So as you could see, the discussion today will be very colorful and will shine a light about the innovation nations and the disruptive technologies that we're discussing. Back to you, Angelica.
Excellent. What a perfect introduction. So from my end, we're just going to start with some Gen Z related questions. So for the first one, I know of some Gen Z related accelerators and incubators and venture funds that are in Israel, in Tel Aviv specifically. Is this a relatively new phenomenon? What is kind of the general perception of VCs when it comes to the Gen Z consumer, and how this demographic is going to affect the VC landscape and investment climate? What's your take on this, Dov?
Angelica, first of all, I cannot really ignore this introduction to me, and I feel embarrassed. Is there any pause button that I can press if you speak too much about myself or anything like that? Overall, I am just a very lucky guy. I work very hard. I'm trying to do my best. And yeah, I was very lucky to be involved in great projects and great activities. But I can tell you that it's more hard work than anything else. Well, you ask about Generation Z, and you ask about the ability to copy this Israel mentality of entrepreneurship and innovation outside of Israel. It's very different questions. First, Gen Z. I do know Gen Z. My son is a Generation Z, but you know, and clearly I know his friends, I know his partners, I know his ecosystem. I see it in the ecosystem in Israel as well. In Israel, there is activity of Gen Z in hackathons, in many opportunities or events that are happening. We had a very interesting event. Actually, this year it was done by Zoom, but the year before it was done in a hall where many young people came to do a hackathon related to the Holocaust, and many great ideas came, and you saw how these young people that are supposed to be the ones who are focused in the screen are actually full of anxiety to really do something for the Holocaust survivors. So as in every generation, there are lots of kinds, and I don't think that there is one thing that you can say about this generation. They are eager to succeed. They are eager to learn. They have the means of using very sophisticated tools that we didn't have in our times. And I can't bring maybe one example of such a guy which did a lot. I'm an investor. That's maybe thing that I can say about myself instead of the other things that Mark was telling. I'm the fortunate guy that invested in a very young entrepreneur. Actually, I did the investment when he was less than 16 years old. And this is a guy called Ido Gino that opened a startup. He opened a startup when he was less than 16 years old. I was the seed money of the startup. And that's a company called Rapid API that actually controls the APIs of the world. They have a unique hub with billions of transactions every month, with over 2 million programmers that are using this hub in order to download or upload APIs, control their APIs. It's a company that is already has in revenues. They just completed recently a round of raising $25 million at a valuation which is over $100 million. And this is by a guy that today is about 22 years old. and he's moving, he's heading toward a company of $1 billion. And you look at the guy, you talk with the guy, hey, I was not, when I was at the age of 30, I wasn't as adult as this guy. Now, is that Generation Z? That's a unicorn, that's a unique persona, that's a unique phenomena. But I think that it's very difficult to talk about a full generation and how will they behave. I do believe that as in any generation, there'll be guys that could establish amazing companies. You see these guys happen coming, doing. The way I got to know the guys, by I went to become it. I was a judge in the competition for young entrepreneurs. By the way, he wasn't the oldest at this competition. There were younger guys, younger than him. I invested in him because I thought he's the best, but there are many others. We will see a lot of technology that would be developed by people of Generation Z. So I think that good things are going to come out of this generation as from the previous generations.
Thank you very much, Dov. We want to explore a little bit more for our audience, if we may, a little bit more about your background and a little bit more about your life story, because this life story will help our audience, especially the younger audience, but also people that are on the rise of becoming entrepreneurs and looking to find their pathway, their roadmap in life. Wanted to reflect and get your thinking, Dov, on what shaped you today as the leading VC and entrepreneur. You just answered a little bit to us, but if we could go into detail, new life.
It's not important. I'm a very simple person. I was always a simple. I was a good student. I wasn't a brilliant guy that, you know, is the guy that everybody knows that he's the genius of the school or something like that. I was a hard worker. I was born to a family where my father was a hard worker. My grandfather was an entrepreneur. He was an amazing entrepreneur. And it relates to the story of Israel. I'll talk about it soon. But I actually lived in the same room as my grandfather. He lived at our home till the age of 18. And looking at it backward, it was like he was preparing me to the life of entrepreneurship. Every summer, he had the jobs that I was supposed to do, which sometimes were very, very difficult, physically very difficult. But I finished my high school. I went to the Technion. I say, in Israel, you can choose to go to study engineering before joining the Army, Navy, or Air Force. That's what I've done. I had a very, 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 very interesting military service. Actually, tank driver and officers of artillery and engineering the Navy and some other stuff. But very, very interesting service of 8.5 years. Well, when I left the Navy, before I left the Navy, I knew I'm going to establish a company. This was when no high-tech companies were established in Israel. But I think that something from the spirit of my grandfather and the drive to do things, to invent, to learn, to study, to come with something unique came from him. And this is what drove me after my Navy service to establish my first company, M-Systems, or what became later M-Systems. And maybe that's a place to answer a question that Angelica actually asked about, can you copy the Israeli concept of a startup nation, all this spirit of innovation, entrepreneurship to other countries, to America? Well, I do have an answer which you might not like, but I would say it anyway. The answer is no. You can't copy. You can learn things. You can try to you can improve things. And by the way, you can get into great success. But Israel is unique because in Israel, majority of the populations are Jewish, as you know. Jewish people went through 2,000 years of, they were pushed out of their country and they were pushed out from every country they went to. So Jews were not allowed actually to be farmers. They could not hold land. They could not own a land. They could not work for the king in many countries. They had to work there to be very innovative in order to find jobs, to survive, practically to survive. And actually, you look at their life of Jews in the last 2,000 years, and they were in constantly sweats of their life and very tough conditions. So only the entrepreneurs survived. If I go back to the story of my grandfather, so he was an entrepreneur. Now, when Germany invaded into Poland, if I can divide the Jews in Poland into two kinds, the entrepreneurs and the non-entrepreneurs, The new entrepreneur said, okay, so Hitler is coming, but you know, we went through many, many troubles before, and we had whoever, and we just bought new furniture, so let's stay at home, and everything will be fine. What does entrepreneur do in such a situation? Entrepreneurs say, hey, there is a problem, I should change. I'm taking control of my life. I won't put my life at the hands of anybody else. So my grandfather, which had seven children at this stage, took his two children, two sons, which were unmarried, and took his wife, and they ran away to Russia. And that's the way my father actually survived. And if my grandfather was not an entrepreneur, there is a good chance that we would not be holding this conversation. Many of the people in Israel, many Jews in Israel, went, their parents or their parents' parents, went through the Holocaust, and only the entrepreneurs survived. Or not only, but many of the guys who were entrepreneurs survived. Entrepreneurship is DNA. It's not only DNA. You can be born as somebody who is not the best runner, but if you practice enough running, you'll be a very good runner, and maybe you will be the world champion. But Israel has an advantage, which is being a country where majority of the citizens are entrepreneurs in their blood. It's good and bad. We are not smarter than other people. And I do insist that Jews or Israelis are not smarter than anybody else. But we do have this entrepreneurship, which, by the way, it comes into sometimes chutzpah, yeah? Which is you say X, okay, I say Y. You say night, I'll say day. You say that I told you to go there, I don't want to go there. What should you do to me? That's Israelis, good or bad, yeah? Sometimes good, sometimes bad. We are not great in operations. Why? Because you tell a group of Israelis, do X, and then half will say, he said X, we'll do Y. He said, go now, I'll go later. We are not organized. We are not great in establishing huge factories or huge organizations. And again, this is Israel for good or bad. When I talk with our colleagues coming from other countries to learn the, hey, what's this startup nation? How do you do it? I always tell them, guys, don't copy. You are good in many, many things. Try to be better in whatever you are. And clearly you can always work hard to improve entrepreneurship and innovation. That's my view about it.
Yes, thank you, Dov. It resonates very well. And one thing that I want to mention, if you want to learn more about Dov, there's nothing else that would be special if you're visiting Israel, is to go to Shimon Peres Center, and you will find more information on Dov and his fantastic discoveries. But now we go to our next series of questions.
Mark, they can come to me and talk to me.
Ah, so okay. Even better, even better, even better.
I found my hologram very boring. I actually, every question I ask, this guy, the hologram, gave the same answer.
Okay. Yeah, well, they tried. They've done an excellent job, of course. They will improve. They will take your advice and they will improve. We will talk about Dov, Grove Ventures, your current venture company right now, investing in chips, in the chip market, Internet of Things, IoT, artificial intelligence, which we'll talk with series of questions, cloud infrastructure, Industry 4.0, digital health, smart transportation. Those are the areas. And some of the companies that we're seeing there are sensor companies like Villa, open source API, Rapid API, the infrared imaging startup Tri AI, industrial sensor startup 3D Signals, which I had a chance to take a look personally. Maybe you, Dov, could share differentiation and uniqueness of some of those companies, the uniqueness of the fund, and why do you think those types of companies are going to be the core, the engine of building the next societal infrastructure?
So maybe I'll go on with the way you directed me, which is tell us about you. I'll tell you a bit, more about myself and how did I get into Grove Ventures, into founding Grove Ventures. So I sold M-Systems and I established Modu. And at the time I established Modu, Eli Harari, which was the CEO of SanDisk, came to me and said, Dov, can you do me a favor and take a look at the Tower Semiconductor? This is a fab. Fab is a factory for chips in Israel, in the northern part of Israel, they are in trouble and they are looking for an active chairman. And I said, Eli, Kaban, I have a model. It's a big hustle. It's a huge task. So he said, you know, and I know Tower, and I know they are in troubles, and I was invited to actually invest there as M-Systems before, which we refused. He said, okay, do me one favor, go to see the CEO of Tower. I went to see Russell, he's in Migdal HaEmek, and Russell, very, very nice person, very smart guy, very strong person. Russell opened the window at his room, and when you look out of the window, you see the village of Migdal HaEmek below the FAD. And he said, do you see this village? It's about 40, 50,000 people in this small village. I said, yeah. He said, you see, we are going to terminate this fab if no one would come to help us, because I need somebody to come and help me in and being the chairman of this fab. And it seems that you are the right person and you can't say no. You know, it's the responsibility not of a company, it's a responsibility for a village. So I said yes, and I became the chairman. And then I say, after I said yes, I asked for the details. And when I saw the numbers and the situation, this was dark, this was black. This was a company with no money, with a loan of $400 million to the banks, where the banks demanded to get the money back, with a negative gross margin. So actually every dollar they sold, it cost them $1.10 or $1.05. So say, hey, don't tell anymore because we lose money with the sales. But clearly it was in a big trouble. And I found myself actually handling this trouble called Tower and succeeding in a 2.5 years of effort to do a turnaround. Clearly not by myself, because I had no capability to do a turnaround, but it is the Russell, the CEO, and the amazing team that was there, and even the help from the founder, of the owners at this time. And we did a turnaround, and now Tower has the value of several billions of dollars. And my job wasn't to open it. My job wasn't to invent. My job was not to run it. My only task there was to take this wagon, which was heading toward a cliff, and succeed almost at the last minute to pull it to the right direction. But this gave me some understanding that how things can be done, not just as a founder or as a manager. And then I began to invest in companies, as you mentioned. And at some time, I said, it's interesting. At first, I love it. I love to see technologies. I love to see people. I love to advise people. I love to be involved in this kind of things, which is creating the future. And the way I can do it, I should do it, is by establishing a professional team that will do this job, because you can't do it yourself. And that's the beginning of Grow Ventures, which is an early stage deep technology venture capital fund investing in Israeli companies. Not because we think that Israelis are better, but because our strategy is to work very close to our companies, to really support them, not just by giving them money, which is nice, of course, but not enough, but giving them advice and working with the entrepreneurs and helping the entrepreneurs and you know, giving them the right hand whenever they need the hand, and helping them and connecting them to the right persons, and being sometimes the sounding board to them when they come with their ideas and directions, and bring to these relations all the failures, all the problems, all the issues, all the difficulties that I experienced before. So maybe I cannot tell everyone how to succeed, but in many, many times I can tell many of those entrepreneurs how not to fail. Okay, and this is very, very crucial. So that's the story of Grow Ventures. This is what we are doing.
Excellent. Thanks so much for telling us more about the story. And obviously, we have a portfolio company with us, Beyond Minds. And I want to direct this question towards you, Ora, on the line. I wanted to ask you, as a CMO, what role do you think empathy plays in enterprise leadership? So Gen Z is quickly popularizing this concept of the chief marketing empathy officer, this kind of new dimension of enterprise leadership. And I wanted to hear your take on this. And another follow-up would be, what does it take to bridge the gap in AI knowledge between older generations and younger generations, if there is a gap? I know there are people who are educated in all different generations and dimensions, but let's say there is some sort of divide. And this is a parallel to what Beyond Minds is trying to achieve by really closing this gap in AI and academia and AI for enterprise. So what's your take on this? And what is your take on having empathy as part of enterprise leadership?
Thank you for that. So I think in general, I was living in the States for a few years before starting the company, and I was really amazed to see how corporate responsibility and empathy has played a more significant role as time went. You can definitely very much see it in consumer products and in more consumer-oriented marketing activities, and how buying personas have now shifted, especially with the Gen Z generation, into something that is very oriented towards empathy. I think in the enterprise sales, which is the business we were at, it's slightly different. Also for us, we have the context of AI and AI being perceived as something not necessarily all good, which I feel is valid. I feel like people need to understand consequences of AI and really weigh them out. But I think from our perspective, we are trying to, in many of the companies that we are working with, try and make AI a little bit more approachable, because it's such a buzzword. It's been thrown out around so many times. And I think our way of doing it is to try and, first of all, convince that the world is better with AI, and convince that man with machine is a better world for man. And that has to go on and be considering all of the aspects of AI. First of all, to understand technology, understand exactly what it does and how it affects everything that we are going to do. And it does, in many ways, is horizontally affecting most of the processes that are currently happening within businesses. And the second thing is to allow people to accept it in a way that would not necessarily automatically mean that it jeopardizes their work vitality, that they have a good way of understanding the decision that AI is capable of making. So a lot of the things that we're doing on that angle is actually trying to make AI, in principle, or the fundamental part of the research of AI, to make it more explainable, to make it more human friendly. So when AI does need to make decisions that, you know, a few years ago we didn't think it would be able to make without human supervision, such as self-driving cars, which is the common example, then we as people, and especially Gen Zs, as the people who are actually going to use that AI capability in through most of their lives, feel more comfortable with it. So I think that's our focus in terms of what do we want to create. In terms of the empathy, is make the technology at one hand better so it can be trusted better. And that's purely fundamental research that needs to happen in order for the technology to improve. And the second of all is to make that technology accessible in concepts so people can understand it.
Perfect response. That's exactly what everyone needs to know. Everyone's wondering, you know, what is empathy? How kind of role does it play in enterprise leadership? But it's very important for the business model, and more enterprises and companies are opening up to having these new roles and chief digital officers and really understanding the role in transformation within enterprise C-suite positions. So this next question is for both Dov and Orr, and it has to do with social innovation, which is a big topic today, social impact investing. And it deals with the implications of Gen Z's emphasis on social impact in VC. So there's this kind of wide understanding and common ground for Gen Z that all companies should be people-centric and they should all be social impact-driven companies. So for example, just recently we had the fortune to speak with Maya Prosser of Lemonade, incredible woman, and we discovered that Lemonade's huge success largely stems from how they were able to strategically unlock the social impact human-centric value chain, which really defines Gen Z consumerism. You can call it millennials as well, but they really were able to unlock that value chain. So with all of this in mind, how do you think Gen Z will transform impact investing and social innovation, and any new startups and companies that are coming into fruition? What advice would you give them in order to really unlock this value chain? Because Lemonade has clearly done it. So why aren't other people getting more into impact investing, and where's the road headed?
Well, if I can begin. First, at the Growth Ventures, we do have two values, and everything we are doing in the fund, everything we are looking at, everything we are evaluating is related to these two values. And the values are people first and value creation. People first, because this is the way we deal with our LPs, with the entrepreneurs who are approaching us. The way we look at companies, we look at the people. First of all, if the people are no good, it won't become a success. And maybe Beyond Minds is a good example for that. And then the second issue of value creation, we took a decision not to invest in companies that the only value is that they can generate money. So if somebody would come to us and say, hey, this is a machine that you put water on one side, you get gold from the other side, we would ask, hey, what good is it? Why should we? Or someone which will say something more practical. We have a great system for advertisement. And actually, the advertisements would become much more effective, efficient, whatever. We would say, you know, just say they don't enter the place. We are not going to invest. We don't want even you to waste your time to come to us to talk about it, because we don't invest in such kind of things. So we look of investments that are creating things that are good for humanity, that bring a true value, that make people happier or healthier, that actually make this world a bit better, a bit more advanced compared to where it was before. And progress in the world means more happy people and people who are living longer. So that's a way we view it. And this relates to any generation. I do believe that young generation should adopt this kind of philosophy of understanding what are we doing in this world? What am I as a person going to do? Am I going to just look for how to make my life enjoyable, watch TV all day long or whatever? Or shall I do something that really brings a true value? And if I can recommend, look for the value. Look for, put a purpose in front of you and go after this purpose. Oh, what do you say?
I think that that's all very, very true. And I think that our partnership with Grove is very much founded about those two values that Dov mentioned. I think one interesting perspective on this topic would be to not necessarily look at how brand awareness or companies are, or the buying personas necessarily, which I would typically do as a CMO, but rather look at the people who work for the company. And if you're trying to create a company that is successful, you have to get the best minds. And I feel like we are very privileged in Beyond Minds to have more than 50 AI advocates and technologists and avid believers in what we do. And the reason for that is not because, you know, necessarily make the most money or necessarily, as Dov mentioned, get the best financial results. But in order to allow for this kind of talent to be able to do their job in the best way, they have to know that they're doing something that is beneficial for society. So I think in hiring, that now becomes a much more significant role. Obviously, a lot of the people that we hire are millennials, but I think it will grow as a trend as Gen Zs come into the workforce, that they want to be working for companies who have a social mission behind them. I wouldn't brand necessarily Beyond Minds as one that has a very distinct social mission, but definitely in everything that we do keep to the principles of do no harm. Obviously, we're a startup. Obviously, you know, we're fighting for our existence every day. And this is a business first orientation, but definitely the people who work for you want to feel that they're touching something that is impactful.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Orr and Dov, for your insights on that question. The next series of questions that I will engage with you would be in artificial intelligence. And certainly, Orr would like to get your perspective. And Dov, please feel free as well. One of the companies that we're discussing right now is your company, Orr. You're the co-founder of Beyond Minds. You have developed a very unique set of technology. Some say that this is made to measure AI, and it has a lot of use for government enterprises, specifically for military and intelligence services. But we could go into a little bit further on this. Tell us a little bit about Beyond Minds that we cannot find on the website. What type of clients are you working with? And another subset of that question is, when the governments and enterprises engage, how do you bridge those gaps that are very hard to solve, and you are able to solve them using technology at Beyond Minds with deep learning and other reinforcement learning and other things? So back to you, Orr.
Thank you. Sure. So I'll introduce the company briefly. So Beyond Minds, which I started with two other founders, Roy Mesrez and Rotem Arlu. And now we have, as I said earlier, a very large team that we're very proud of. And the mission of Beyond Minds is to really bridge the gap between academic research and AI that, as you know, is accelerating all the time, and it's kind of being written as we speak, to enterprises and the adoption of AI across enterprises. Basically, what we do is we create high-impact solutions for a variety of business problems across sectors, and our significant innovation is in our ability to break down AI problems that we don't know and basically create a research-driven, highly accurate, and complete comprehensive solution in a matter of weeks. So basically, we're decoupling the trade-off between accuracy and time to market, and that's what the true value that we bring to the table. And it tends to be that AI problems are unlike necessarily the software world that we've been a part of for so many years. And this is a new domain that requires some level of research and customization for those edge cases. And there are many of them. The real world problems that companies are dealing with may look from the outside as similar between one company to another. In many cases, those particular problems have to attend to the data limitations that companies have to the level of accuracy and mission critical necessities of those particular instances. And so we kind of live in that gap, we believe is tremendous, to basically allow those companies to accelerate the AI adoption in their organizations and still maintain that level of excellence that's required to actually deploy an AI solution. And AI solutions, as much as we like to talk about them, they're not necessarily very much in place in production currently at the market, which is the major challenge we're looking to solve. So how are you able to make sure that AI is being adopted? How are you able to make sure that you break down all those barriers that currently hold back enterprises from incorporating AI, even though everyone is talking about it? As I said earlier, we work across sectors. So we have, as you mentioned, some intelligence government, but it's by no means the only type of sector we play in. We have companies like Microsoft, KLA, Samsung, companies like KPMG. So very major banks that I hope that I will be able to reveal later on. So I think that we are keeping ourselves horizontal in that way to basically be able to keep our technology stack very advanced, and then allow multiple types of companies to use it and then get specific to the domain together with them. We were very instrumental, I believe, to help COVID-19 with the government here in Israel. So we were creating algorithms to predict the severity that a patient that has been diagnosed with COVID-19 be able to actually get into a severe situation. And we've been involved in different other activities to help contain that pandemic here in Israel. And as we go on, we do create specific, more verticalized oriented products to problems that we see that are repeating in different industries, such as the industry 4.0 that we are investing heavily now into in areas such as predictive maintenance and defect detection in those areas. So basically bringing that advancements in fundamental research that we create here into mass market.
Thank you very much. The next question also continues with artificial intelligence. And I want to start this with Dolph on the macro perspective and then also get back to you with some maybe use cases. So the next question deals with the trends and advancements that Dolph and or both of you are seeing in artificial intelligence in Israel and abroad. And specifically, what are the challenges and bottlenecks in AI that are most prolific that connect to you? How do you address them through use cases? And what advancements are you seeing in the area of deep learning, neural network deep learning? What are new specific AI advancements should we be seeing in 2020, 2021 to address some of those challenges? So starting with Dolph from a macro point of view on AI, and certainly to continue the discussion with use cases and some of the unique challenges that you're seeing in your company.
I have this perspective of seeing history, and I do remember the days where computers just came, and being a programmer was, wow, this guy knows how to write programs that computers, those strange machines are performing, and they can add numbers. This is uniqueness. And then, you know, everybody that comes out of high school actually knows how to program. And this is the new stuff. Hey, AI, this is, you know, uniqueness. This is a very, very clear, very advanced tool that actually do something. And the question, what is it doing? So years ago, 30, 40 years ago, people ask, oh, programming, who is doing it? For what? What purposes? Everything is done by programming. Our life are controlled today by programming. We are talking now because somebody wrote a program that translates our voice to electronic signals and transfer them to servers, and which they are going through manipulation there, and they are moving, they are spread to other. All of it is programming. All of it is actually this kind of things that, you know, look very, very strange 40, 50 years ago. AI is going to do for us the same thing. We are going to see AI involved in every part of our life. The most important part probably is going to be things related to health. And I believe that everybody is going to be monitored, and all the data would go to a center, and every sort of change would create an alert. An alert would be an automatic alert that would be handled by computers and not by physicians, but computers that would say, hey, take this medicine, or hey, you are eating junk food. You have to really do more gym, otherwise ABCD. And this will create better life for us Because it will help us to live in a much healthier way. Clearly, it would monitor diseases, it will monitor sickness, it will monitor bad health conditions, and will allow us to actually live life with less being occupied by health problems, because of it, this will be at the background of our life, not something that is in front of you every day, but things that are done for you somewhere at the background, and all of it will be AI driven. That's my belief. That's the biggest change that is going to happen in our life. And I do believe that COVID-19, in a way, is pushing this the whole activity to make a progress in this field. It puts a lot of emphasis on how to do it, where to do it, when to do it, in a system that in general, health system, is very traditional, conservative in a way, and not really ready for taking risks and make changes. So this will change. Or?
Yeah, I think I would like to point out two things. First of all, the major involvement of recent neural networks, deep learning in particular, is that it now allows AI to not only bring insights, but actually to make decisions on its own, or at least support decisions on a semi-automatic way. Because the level of accuracies have improved dramatically. So now, if you look 2 years ago, it's much more achievable to do things that we didn't think would work. And again, that research is still being written as we speak, advanced in a very accelerating pace, making it very hard for enterprises to even relate to what's actually going on and what's actually available and achievable in terms of what they can accomplish. I think the major trend is to try to adopt AI, to get AI into production. A lot of POCs have failed. A lot of money was spent in trying to get something to work. But I think we will now start to see more production-ready AI. Because one of the things that I think hopefully in Beyond Minds we support is basically AI was a little bit, needed to be, I guess, pampered, for lack of a better word, before that. You had to get all your data in line. You had to have significant resources in collecting data. And now technology is advanced enough to really meet the data at its current position. Obviously, you can't do anything without any data, but it's much easier to do now with noisy data, with unstructured data, with data that is not necessarily in high amounts. So all of those things that we develop technology for to be able to solve is now allowing companies that, even if they don't have the perfect data, I would say, still get a lot from AI and still make it through the threshold of an algorithm that is capable of functioning in mission critical environments. That is, I think, the major thing that neural networks allowed us to do. And the second thing that I think Dov would be interested in is everything that has to do with edge devices. So the ability for AI to make decisions on the fly is heavily relied on, or in real life is heavily relied on its need to make decisions in a low computational resources environment, meaning like your phone or a camera, or any type of real-time device that's currently operating. And that is due to the fact that AI models can now be really compressed to something that can create a lot of value instantly. And I think those are the two trends that I would signal out that we are seeing most predominant at the moment.
Wonderful. The next thing I want to ask also is both of you can share. There's an old saying that necessity is the mother of invention, that it drives innovation. And Israel arguably embodies this phrase more than any other nation. And this mentality has caused, obviously, novel technologies to flourish that have changed the world, like drip irrigation, for example, and like the USB memory stick that we've mentioned earlier. Do you think it's possible to adopt this mentality in the United States? And, we're kind of experiencing this right now with the whole coronavirus crisis, which is pushing us to develop new solutions, of course. But is this possible? I'm curious to learn from both of you, starting with Dov.
Well, maybe there is a story that relates to how inventions are done. It's a story about the invention of the USB flash drive. Do you want me to tell the story? Shall I tell the story?
Yes, please do.
I'll do it shortly. The USB flash drive was actually invented by me by one day when I flew to the States to give a speech. And this was back in 1998. Every time I do a presentation, the night before, I like to open, go over, maybe fix things here and there. So I was on a flight, Tel Aviv to New York, did some changes. I believe I closed my computer, went to sleep. My computer wasn't closed and actually kept running until the battery went to zero. And I didn't know about that. I went to the conference in Manhattan. My time, I went on the stage, wanted to give my speech, and whoop, that's a situation my computer is off, talk verbally about numbers, I may make mistakes. And somebody in the audience, one of my friends, was telling me, shall I give you my computer? I said, hey, yeah, but how can I transfer my presentation from my computer, which is not working, into yours? I can't. And, you know, this was a terrible feeling. I do remember the feeling of that until now. You know, 400 eyes looking at you and say, hey, open your mouth, what do you have to say? I have no presentation. What should I tell my colleagues or my employees that I went to New York and my computer didn't work? That sounds really bad. So finally, computer said, okay, I'm alive. Here I am. Here's my presentation. I gave the presentation. But when I finished the presentation, I say, never again in my life, I will go to make a presentation without having a copy at my pocket. So I can actually give a presentation from any computer. And I knew that USB is coming, and I knew what is flash. We knew as a company how to take flash memory and make it to appear like a hard drive. And it's connecting dots. And this is what stands behind the invention of the USB flash drive, actually. So here is a great example of necessity that drives a solution. Can you copy it? No. But clearly, I think that if you tell stories of innovation, if you teach enough about that, if you can allow people to be more open to innovation, to think out of the box. Actually, one of the things which I recommend, and I hope that there are many young listeners to this podcast, go take a subject, learn the subject very, very deeply, you know, whatever it is, whether it's a subject in chemistry or physics or in artificial intelligence or in a very specific niche of math, and try to be number one on that specific subject. If you go deeply into that, you may find an invention, an idea, and a new approach, new way that can make something really, really large. The fact that I invented the USB flash drive is because I knew what is flash. I knew very well how to make flash appear like a hard drive. It's not just because I went to the sea, I saw the waves, and oops, here comes a great idea. I will invent USB flash drive. It just doesn't work like that. So my recommendation to the young audience, and even not to the young audience, go and study. Go become very, very, very good in something. Yeah, work on that. Add information. Go to meetings related to conferences. Read information. Internet is amazing because of the huge information that exists there. And make yourself a habit to go and search for things. Open, find a subject, and become number one in this subject.
Thank you very much, Dov. You're absolutely correct. It's about learning. And you just mentioned is for younger generation, for everybody else, we're in a lifetime learning, right? It's a lifetime learning. So every single time we're speaking like with people like yourself or others, people should be learning new information, following up, Googling, getting educated, getting reskilled. I think this is how we're going to enable this digital economy going forward and create more opportunity out of digitalization is through reskilling employees, also improving education. Angelica and I have been speaking a lot. So with this in mind, I wanted to cover the final few questions that we have, and they are related also to healthcare and digitalization and value chains. So Dov, the next question would be to you related to healthcare. You touched upon this topic. It's healthcare is also part of our social innovation. It's part of our society. You founded Glucom, a company which you are the chairman. It's diabetes, of course, as I mentioned, is a daily part of millions of people. Many Americans are impacted with this crisis. It's a very complex situation. Can you talk about Glucom in specifically and maybe other healthcare solutions that you invested and touched upon? What does it do and what advanced technologies does it use to solve a problem?
Okay, I'll be happy to talk about that. Actually, it's Glucom. And Glucom handling diabetes. And I got to it, as you mentioned before, the need creates the invention. You said millions of Americans. The real answer is not, it's not millions, it's tens of millions. Actually, about 8% of the population of the world is suffering of diabetes or pre-diabetes. And these numbers are only growing. And it's a very, very bad disease because as somebody who has diabetes, if you don't handle it, nothing bad happens to you the next day. You don't feel bad. You don't feel that you are unhealthy. Just that your internal parts of your bodies are destroyed more and more every day. and you will end your life actually in a very miserable way, very costly, very, very painful. So that's diabetes, and diabetes has to be handled. And the way diabetes is handled today is exactly as it was handled 40 or 50 years ago. People go to the physicians once a quarter, and he has about 8 minutes to talk to you. And actually, he wants to see your blood test. So he looks at the blood test. And if you take medicine or take insulin, you give him a piece of paper with all your numbers, all the tests that you have done. And he has these few minutes, couple of minutes, to look at many, many numbers and tell you, give you new directions. Maybe take another medicine. Maybe take less insulin before you go to sleep. He doesn't have the time. He doesn't have the attention to do it. Most of the diabetics patients worldwide are not handled correctly. And I don't think that it's a mission that is possible for a physician that sees patients once every few minutes. It just doesn't work out. And glucomy came for that. So the beginning was with inventing a blood glucose meter that actually provides the data to the physician in a way that the system monitors the data. And if there is a problem, an issue, the physician can actually give recommendations or talk with the patients. We saw that by itself is not really helpful because the physician just don't have the time. So we put all the formulas, all the logic required to handle the patients into a system. And actually, this system is able to replace the physician in many, many cases, not in all of them, in order to provide monitoring and directions to the patients. I do believe that's a part of the way diabetes is going to be handled, with a lot of AI and machine learning and a lot of means sensors that actually would not require the patient to go and test himself at the hospital or at the HMO. And practically, this will allow a much healthier world. This is the intention of establishing glucomy. Again, it came from my need because I had diabetes and I had to handle it. And I looked at the way it is handling and I was quite shocked of the very low level of the ability of a physician with all his efforts and great means to really provide a good service to me as a patient. I do see it as part of the revolution of handling medicine, the new kind of medicine.
Thank you, Dolph, for this story about glucomine and what we do about using all the advanced technologies, analytics, and AI. It's certainly a major problem that people are facing. As you probably seen, or maybe didn't have that much time, but you have brilliant ideas. Israel has been far ahead in dealing with the COVID-19, in my humble opinion, than many other countries. And Israel is constantly inventing what we call unique technology solutions that Or spoke about that you have addressed and opening the new sense of social innovation for the new types of value chains, which are all very much digital now, to and then taking it to the massive scale together with partners globally, whether the partners are in Japan or the United States. And in this recent article that just came out and was retweeted today by Tel Aviv and Forbes and others, it is an article that talks about what are some of the learnings that the United States in this particular case needs to take from Israel and some of the advances that Israel has made in innovation. So I wanted to, as you were discussing some of the learnings from the M systems that you founded, what are some of the biggest things that the takeaway should be for the United States and other countries? Is it government-supported innovation? Is it the concept that Angelica spoke about, the chutzpah and yourself? Is it about the technological solutions? Is it about the core of everything has to be innovation? What is it that the lessons that could come out of the country that has less than 9 million people but are inventing so many things and changing lifestyles around the world?
Mark, I'm very sorry. It's a secret formula. I can't tell you the formula. I don't want to lose our advantage over others, so I won't tell you. Practically, I think that the issue of raising, encouraging innovation, encouraging startup thinking, encouraging taking risks, chutzpah, that's part of it, being not going on the copying others or going on the same line as others. This is what we have in this country. Great universities, you do have great universities. You need to take a small fraction of the glory that sports, for example, heroes are getting and transfer part of it into glorifying scientists or people with unique inventions, this would take America to a new stage, because we all depend on the young generation, the kids that are in school or even in the kindergarten, hoping that this generation would come and not just willing to be a basketball player or a model or whatever it is, but being a scientist, somebody who comes with new inventions and new companies and bring progress to the world. That's the idea.
Thank you very much. You see, you know, there's no magic sauce, as you mentioned, but you shared some valuable insights, and some of those insights hopefully will stick in enterprises and corporations and research, because, you know, as you mentioned, not everything comes, there's obviously no secret sauce, but not everything also comes from the corporate side. And if we bring a little bit about learning about the culture and innovation in a specific society, we all learn. So that's idea. Final question for this session is, people have been talking about second or another Silicon Valley for years. Silicon Valley possibly in places like China or Stockholm or Germany. But in this particular case, we're talking about Silicon Valley in Israel, and that's the case. So the first one everybody seems to connect is the western coast of the United States, the Silicon Valley, the San Francisco Bay Area. But when we are discussing that future between different types of technology hotspots, what will the COVID-19 digital innovation world look like in the hotspots? Will there be many hotspots? Will Israel become, you know, a quite dominant hotspot because of the social innovation and stuff? What will the future bring to us, and especially the future of AI? And finally, to project everything, how will, if the future continues to be bright, which I believe it will, on sustainable innovation in Israel, how will it change the state of Israel?
I believe that Israel will continue to lead in entrepreneurship. I believe that progress in Israel and worldwide will continue. We'll get back into track. I believe that maybe COVID-19 would bring with it some humbleness, some more emphasis on true value creation, less, you know, all these investments in marketplaces and things which are not really deep tech and not really valuable in order to create better life. And I think that in general, we will see a better world, because this is the trend. This is where we are. There are glitches here and there. There are blips here and there. And COVID-19 is a blip to the world. But the trend, the direction are very, very clear. It's a better world. It will be a better world.
Excellent. Thank you for these insights. You know, Dovanor, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. It was incredible to hear your story and journey, Dov, first of all, what it means to really be an entrepreneur, the values that built Israel into the startup nation that everyone knows today. And Or, thank you for your insights on AI applications and for sharing with us the technology of Beyond Minds and what you're providing for audiences. And we really look forward to sharing your thoughts and perspectives with our audience. And I hope that this serves as an inspiration and a call to action to innovate for people to take the lead and to not be afraid to channel that inner chutzpah that we learned about and to become digital pioneers and ultimately enact change and societal solutions at this most important time. So again, thank you both for joining us as digital pioneers today, and we very much look forward to sharing everything with our audience.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Digital Pioneers Dialogue podcast, and please be sure to subscribe on whatever channel you're tuning in from so that we can always keep you up to date on the latest and greatest AI insights.